Just to say a little bit about what I'm trying to do on this course, just to make it a bit clear, I'm in a way trying to do two things. So I'm trying to hopefully talk deeply, talk valuably about our life, the big issues of our life. I like to think of it as first issue matters. We're alive and we're going to die. We don't know when. We want to make the most of our life. We don't know how to do that. We often think we do, but we don't really know. We often feel confused by the things that we thought we'd try that should work but don't work. So I'm trying to keep on pointing us to those kind of what I call first level matters. What is the nature of life? What is the nature of perception even? Science is showing us more and more that whatever is going on, it's really, really weird. It's like phenomenally weird, much weirder than you thought. So none of us know what's going on. I don't know what's going on, and again, nor do you. And the first thing I want to do is keep reminding us that we don't, and that what we've got is ideas, views, opinions, beliefs about what's going on, but we don't really know. So I keep it wanting every week to make sure I'm touching on those, for me, most important questions. Because, you see, if we can feel that we're grasping or starting to be touched by those questions, we don't need to worry too much about the detail of did I manage to do a breathing space or not. You see what I mean? The important thing about keeping on talking about the important things is that we remember that putting it into practice is a detail. And as long as we keep on focusing on the important things, gradually the details will come into place and we don't need to worry about them too much. Yeah? At the same time, I am trying to say, here's what we need to do this. It's not a theoretical course. So Buddhism isn't a philosophy. It's not trying to come up with an explanation for things. It's trying to deepen our minds so that we discover things for ourselves, discover the meaning of life ourselves. I mean, it's nothing less than that. It's trying to deepen our minds so that we discover the truth for ourselves. What gets in the way of that discovery is our fears, our assumptions, our clinging to who I think I am, to what I think I know. We get nervous if we start to feel like we don't know who we are so much and we don't know what we think we know. So I'm quite consciously trying to rattle that a bit, just very, in a Buddhist-y nice way. Not too rattly, but not too soft, yeah? So I'm trying to do that, and I'm trying to say, let's actually try and put it into practice. So someone in my little, the group I joined, was just saying that they one of their attempts this week had been to clear out their work desk at work, presumably. and they were saying they just managed to do one drawer. And they'd realised it was actually a much bigger issue than they thought. Anyway, that must have been a very deep drawer. But I know the feeling. What strikes me about that, it's a very small thing, isn't it? Just clearing out that drawer and then thinking, oh good heavens. And you stand there with something thinking, what should I actually do with this? Recycle, bin, file, will I ever remember it? What do I do with each, paperclip? Where do they go? Probably no one has those anymore. Anyway, very, very small thing. But what strikes me about those things is that when you even do that, just clear out one drawer, even though you meant to do the whole drawer, the whole desk, you have this feeling, not just that I cleared out that drawer, but that I'm now in charge of my life again. I'm an agent in my life. I'm not just sort of reacting to what happens to happen to me. I'm just a little bit, you can feel like you're taking charge of it. Psychologists call it mastery, where you feel like you're mastering it. Yeah? It's taken an effort, you have to get yourself to clear out that drawer. And you probably needed to start with, I'm going to clear out the whole office, and then you end up with a drawer I can manage. But you get much more from it than you think. You get a sense that those small things a symbolic of what you're trying to do with all of your life. Small things and large things, I want to try and touch on this later, they're not, they sort of interpenetrate in a way that we don't sort of expect. Like I noticed recently, I was just clearing up after a retreat and cleaning the loo and mopping. Did I say this last week? Anyway, I noticed, you know, at the end of retreat, I've been on so many retreats, I need, you know, that we all clear it up and do the loos and other, and I did the loos and mopped up. And I feel this little bit of satisfaction at the end of that. I was leading the whole retreat, and people say, oh, no, 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 you don't need to do it. But, you know, no, you do need to do it. But what struck me was that little bit of satisfaction of doing it. Felt like a metaphor for what I'm trying to do with my whole life, that I leave the world a more cared for, loved place, if you see what I mean. And it was, I want that to be in every interaction, that I leave my every communication, that I leave every class, every meditation, that I've flourished my life, and I've flourished the life around me a bit. I think that's what we all want. Yeah? And eventually, what Buddhism's saying is that just becomes how you are, that you're always contributing, that all that there is a contribution. There isn't anything else left. Yeah? So I'm trying to say two things at the same time. I'm trying to say, here are the big issues of life. Let's keep on focusing on those. So let's not get too worried about whether we did all the mindfulness, you know, the mindful breathing spaces, whether we did, how much we managed to reduce input. And I'm saying, let's make sure that we are doing as much practice as we can, because there's no theory we're just trying to get hold of. We're trying to change our life and change our mind. Yeah? So you need to hold that balance on the retreat. No, it's not a retreat. It's a course. You need to hold that balance of trying to keep on focusing on the main things. If you do that, everything else gradually will come along with that. Not in 8 weeks, but in time. Yeah? So do that and try and do whatever practice you can. So again, I'll at the end tonight, set the home practice. Better not talk too long. Anyway, so that's just a bit of a starter for 10. So what I've been trying to talk about last week was that what we're trying to do on this course, and what I'm trying to do in my life, and what I think everyone is somewhere trying to do in their life, is discover or uncover a deeper consciousness, a new consciousness. Yeah? A consciousness that goes beyond the usual consciousness that we can feel trapped in. Planning, fantasizing, worrying, remembering, forgetting, and remembering again, and so on. That kind of thin consciousness that gets us through our day, but when we go to bed, you sort of feel, have I actually lived today? Have I done anything worthwhile today? Yeah. So what this whole course is about uncovering, discovering a new kind of consciousness. And what I was just saying there in the break about the retreat is really they're really good conditions to discover an uncover a new kind of consciousness. First thing to say about that new consciousness is that it feels whole. Yeah. It feels integral, whole, unified, collected rather than distracted, unified rather than dissipated. So it feels whole. Yeah. So that's one metaphor for that new consciousness. It feels whole in the sense of it's got, you feel embodied, you feel emotionally in touch, and your thinking is working together. You're a whole person, not a collection of people fighting with each other, even if that's just in your mind. Yeah? Any deeper experience is characterized by wholeness, a sense of feeling that all your energies are unified. Yeah? As soon as your energies are unified, your life in that moment is deepening. Yeah? So that's to think of it in a static way, and then more dynamically, you feel in this first development of consciousness, you take ownership of your life. You take ownership for the agency of your life. And this has got a strong moral aspect. Basically, you come to own more and more that what you do is having an effect all the time. What you think what you feel, how you act in the world, how you talk to people, how you manage a tea break if you're leading the class, if you're turning your machines off. You know, everything we do is having an effect. Do you see how that's a quintessentially adult matter, isn't it? Children don't really see that what they're doing has an effect. So they can say, I hate you. I remember Sukhasiddhi once came to report in saying that her daughter was saying how much she hated her. She doesn't. Her daughter isn't, you know, malevolent. She just doesn't realise yet. I mean, of course, at times children don't realise that they're having an effect. That they're an agent in the world. You see what I mean? That they have agency, and that what they do changes their consciousness and changes the world around them. So, like, I picked up Alex, my 9-year-old, from school today. You know, she's got eyes like a panda. And you cannot get children to admit that they're tired, because it's an insult to a child. You say, are you tired? No. You know, they're like this huge bag. So what adults do is they take charge. They become the child's agency. So they quieten things down before bedtime. They say, okay, no, you now need to go and have a bath. You instinctively quieten up things. You stop any, you don't let them eat chocolate coins, you know, or run around screaming. You try and quieten everything down because you know that actually they're really tired. They don't know that has an agency. That if they carry on screaming and eating chocolate coins, it's going to be a nightmare tomorrow in the morning, you know, to get them to school. So do you see how an adult is trying to hold the agency of a child? Seems to me a huge responsibility. And you see how that's this deepened aspect of integration, is doing that for ourselves, is feeling in touch with our own agency, that what we do has an effect on ourselves, it has an effect on the world, and it has an effect on other people. What you think, what you feel, how you act, has an effect, and that you do have a choice how to act. And that awareness, this first stage, awareness or integration, as we're calling it, you can swatch, you know, those two words are interchangeable. Awareness is about creating more and more of a gap between what happens to you and how you respond, so that you can start to guide your life, so that you can start to make wise choices. So for me, you know, I've just today, you know, I went over to South London, picked up a reluctant 9-year-old from school, took them to the library, sort of, you know, then took them back to the mother's house, then came over here, got my bike over here. And by the time I'm here, you can imagine I've had to cycle, so I'm a bit tired, a bit stressed. You know, I've got all sorts of issues thinking about Alex as I get here. And you see how easy it is then to not be very friendly as you get here, as if that's going to protect your state of mind. And as I got here, Peter, who's on the team for the main class, he'd come early, and I just said, oh, do you want to come upstairs and eat? I know, because I cooked earlier on the day as well. So made a meal for 10 or whatever it was. So I knew there was a lot more. So I said, why don't you come and eat with us? And just being a bit more generous. What I wanted to do is just that actually I need to get upstairs, I need to eat, then I need to get down for the team meeting, then I've got this big class starting. To see how, with that mindset, I'm already narrowing my life if I'm not careful, even though I'm a goodly Buddhist teacher. But as soon as I just see someone think, why don't you come and have a meal with me? As soon as I'm a bit generous, it has an incredible effect. It doesn't take any very much time. He then came up and eat. And then I started to feel that, actually, I did have time. I didn't have to go into this, no, I can't think about you, I'm too busy to think about that, which is the instinct when you've got lots on. More and more of us have got lots on. I think we're creating a world where very soon you'll either be working all the time or not working at all. You know, that's a terrible world. I'm really, at the moment, extremely worried by the world. We're living in a way that can't be sustained. So what we're practicing, first of all, is this great stage of integration, of awareness, where we notice particularly where our mind's going. Like me coming back thinking, I need to just get upstairs, I need to have my meal, I need to get ready for the class, and try to think, but I don't need to stay in that mindset. I can still be, I don't actually need to be like that, if you mean. I can keep stepping out of it. Do you see how that's about being, that's owning my life? It can feel like, no, what I've got to do is ignore people, get upstairs, I haven't got time to be friendly. Do you see what I mean? It can feel like that, but that's just a story. It isn't actually like that. Yeah.
Is there not a role for kind of skillfully owning a boundary and your time?
Yes.
To be more efficient and conserve your energies, you
know? Yes, there is, yeah. So. It's difficult any time you teach something, as soon as somebody, you say something like that, I think, well, of course, sometimes you have to say, look, no, not now. Mm-hmm. You know, but that not now can become your standard thing, a habit. What we're trying to do, probably another way of putting it, is get out of just reacting habitually to whatever happens to happen to us, whether it's no or whether it's yes. Because sometimes if you're saying yes, you're then saying no to somebody else without meaning to. So often what we do in our life, we react along habitual lines that are already set up for us and then live along our habit. So we're trying to get more awareness, a new kind of, little bit of a new consciousness that gives us, okay, I could act like that, and that might be what, but I might need to act like that this time. Yeah. So let me say a bit more about this and see whether we get anywhere. So two first things I wanted to say is, firstly, we're looking for experiences of wholeness. That's what we're primarily looking for in meditation. Body, emotions and thoughts all working together. A sense of being unified. Yeah? And you need, in meditation, you need to look out for that. Keep an eye out for being feeling unified. Yeah? We'll be talking a bit more about meditation later on. But aesthetic experiences are very unifying. I went to see that film Lobster, which I wouldn't recommend. Terribly violent. Anyway, I'd recommend the first half. Anyway, but at the end of it, you get that lovely feeling of just sitting there watching the credits and feeling a bit unified in some way. Feeling at ease in yourself, at ease in your skin, sort of satisfied. So keep an eye out for those kind of feelings that feel more whole, more unified, more satisfied, where there's less wanting and craving and yearning, and you're just like, this is fine, I'm fine just now. And then see whether you can get a sense of this matter of agency, that what you do, everything you do, I mean, the great challenge for us human beings is that everything we do, everything we think, is creating ourselves. We're constantly in the process of creating ourselves. So by being generous, I become one person in that moment. By being ungenerous, I become another person in that moment. We're constantly refashioning how consciousness appears to us by how we think, how we speak, how we act. Yeah? So this first stage of integration is taking ownership of your life so that your life and your consciousness unfold in a way that feels fruitful, creative rather than habitual, you know, to go back to your point, valuable rather than just sort of point missing, and it's got its own momentum to it, which is your momentum. If you don't have your own momentum, you'll be prey to the momentum coming to you from technology, to everything that comes to your phone or your iPad. The market preys on our lack of momentum. Yeah. So integration is also about this feeling of momentum. This is I'm living the life I actually choose to live, moment and moment again. And of course I fall off that, and then I take charge again a bit. Yeah. So that's the beginnings of a new kind of consciousness. Just to say a little bit more about that, that can deepen. So, I mean, again, I'll need you to read the chapter this week, because there's a lot to say about this. But one way of thinking about this new kind of consciousness is that it has a horizontal aspect, what we call horizontal integration, and a vertical aspect. So what we're trying to do is cultivate both. So horizontal integration means things like clearing out that drawer, What you feel when you do that, somebody else said in my group, I've been putting off writing this letter, I needed to write a proper email back, not just thanks for your email, I must talk to you about that, but a proper email back. And she was just saying how satisfied she felt once she wrote, you know, the genuine thing. Even though she was tired, she felt better for it. You immediately feel a bit more integrated when you take ownership of your life. In the book, I describe this time when I just tidied up my room. I'd been sort of thinking for ages, I haven't got time to tidy up my room. When I did, I immediately felt more integrated and more in charge. Yeah? So all that's horizontal integration. It also means things like telling the truth. So in the home practice, I want to suggest something you might do about this, which is if it's possible, find a situation in the next week where you can tell somebody your life story, but I'll say more about that in a minute. One of the things about horizontal integration is finding conditions in which one can tell the truth. So it's not just an internal matter, it's also a matter about telling the truth so that people and feeling understood by others. That's incredibly releasing. So when I first came to this centre when I was 25, when was it? 1980-something. One of the big things for me was, could I be gay here? Yeah. After all, that's what I was. What was that going to be, something I could be frank about and straightforward about, or did I need to hide it, which was much more of an issue then. But it wasn't just that, it was, could I be more than that there? Because by that time I'd been on the gay scene and frankly not enjoyed it. You know, it didn't seem, I thought didn't mean to be this personal. Anyway, no, I thought once I got onto the gay scene, I hope that isn't a shock for people, that I'd feel that I could be myself now. But when I was on the gay scene, I had to be gay, and I didn't want to be gay. I just wanted to be me. I didn't even know what that was, but I didn't want to be gay. If you see me, I didn't want it as a career option. You see me? It was just like saying I got, you know, in those days, dark hair. You know, that's all I wanted it to be. But I didn't want to have to apologise for it or admit it, that I've got curly hair or something, you know. So do you see how, for me, coming here and being amongst friends who weren't bothered by it and didn't sort of, you know, sort of think that that word expressed who I was in my being, which is just not. It's just an accident, just like having freckles or something. Do you see how that was, how integrating that was? I needed a context in which I could be myself so that I could then be more than myself. Secrets, inhibitions, things that you can't admit, they slow down integration. Actually, impatience also slows down integration. If you're too goal-orientated, that can slow down integration. But you see how actually what we're trying to do here at the centre is create a community where you can be who you are. You don't have to hide anymore. Not so you can just, I don't know, be as bad as you are, as it were, but so that you're released to be more than who you are. Because we all want to be more than any of the labels that we've got. Mother, father, tinker, tailor, soldier, gay, sailor. I like that was good. I must put that in next time. So that's all to do with horizontal integration. We'll need the cooperation of, that's why friendship is so important. That's why a community of people that we can just feel ourselves. Even things like the fact that I suggest you can come here and have a sleep. It's all trying to say, we're just friends here. We're trying to be just friends here. Because that's, to become integrated, that's what you need, yeah? Friends who let you be yourself, let you make your own choices, where you can be honest, yeah? And then be more than yourself. The other area, though, is vertical integration. I've written about it in the book, but the more we become integrated horizontally, and the external element of that is a community, what we call a sangha, it's friendship, it's a place where I can be honest. The internal element of this horizontal integration is this matter, this simple matter of keep on stepping out of our propuncture, these driven, often quite painful repetitive, habitualized, automatic thinking into a deeper awareness of the body and so on. Very, very simple, but it's something that we're trying to train in all the time, to keep stepping out of arguing with someone in our head, catastrophizing, blaming, and so on, into direct experience. Yeah? And we need to be doing that in meditation, we need to be doing that in mindfulness. So I'm going to come back in a moment with what I'd like you to do about that. So again, it's got this internal aspect of meditation and mindfulness, but it's got this external aspect of friendship, community, honesty, so that you can be yourself, so that you don't have to inhibit yourself in a certain sort of way. Then there's this vertical integration. So the more horizontally integrated you become, the more something else can start to happen. Let me just check the time. Gosh. The more can happen. So if you think of all, being human as sort of bobbing around on the sea, consciousness, ordinary consciousness, or thinking, rationalizing, justifying, explaining consciousness. If you think of that as just sort of a little raft on a sea, below us we have mythic depths, you know, that go off right into the depths with great creatures down there. Above us we have the suprapersonal heights, the stars. Yeah. You see, that's the Buddhist vision of what we're like. We've got this ordinary consciousness. There's much more to us below that, and there's much more to us above that. Yeah. What happens as you become more integrated is that those dimensions of consciousness start to be felt more. Sometimes in very subtle ways, hardly noticeable ways. You know, for instance, yesterday I was seeing quite a few friends of mine. And I was meeting Adam Wiz. Adam, he's over there. But we went out to see lobster. It's all very contemporary, this course, isn't it? You know, and I've been meeting friends of mine all afternoon. And by the evening, I just felt really established in a sort of very quiet love for my friends. I was just really pleased to be with them. And so when I saw Adam, I was really just pleased to be in that very quiet way, which when you're in touch with it, feels so human and so much what you want. I don't mean anything romantic, I just mean, I'm just really pleased to have these friends in my life. And it's just nice to hang out, it doesn't matter too much what you do. You come back, you go watch a film, and you talk about it on the way back on the bus and crack a few jokes. But you just feel that something more coming into your life. There is a sense of love in your life. To me, that's what I sort of want most, really. So it can be very, very subtle like that, or it can at times be very powerful and even disruptive. I've had experiences in front of paintings that are, you know, where suddenly my consciousness seemed to be in another world. I've had meditation experiences where I experience a wholly new kind of consciousness. It's best to think of these things as kind of the vertical dimension breaking into the horizontal, if you mean. I mean, anyone who's written, for instance, so I write poems sometimes, and anyone who writes poems, what you're doing is you're looking out for, I mean, might go back to your creative question, wherever my creative man was, there you are. When you're writing, you know, don't you, that the person that finishes a poem or writes a short story or whatever it is you're doing, That's not you. That's not your ordinary consciousness. You're looking out for something, what I want to call vertical. That's what the muses were. You know, originally poems were started with a PN to the muse. It's really just saying, I can't possibly write this poem with my ordinary mind. I need help here. Whether you're writing a song, painting a picture, talking even sometimes to a friend when it's a difficult conversation, you can really feel, I just can't do this. I remember Nico saying to me that one time he just talking to his sister, and his sister was going through a hard time, and he just felt that suddenly he was saying all the things he needed to say without thinking about them. So this is what I mean by vertical consciousness, vertical integration. That things from the depths or from the heights start to come into your life. What we need is for enough horizontal integration so that isn't very disruptive. You need the both. You need this horizontal integration, taking ownership of your life, admitting things to yourself, including those shadowy areas that we want to dismiss and project onto other people, taking our life back into us. This is me that's doing this. This is, you know, it's not that I'm really a chilled out guy, but life keeps stressing me out. You know, I seem to be prone to stress and so on. Taking ownership like that. I'm somebody who does this, who can get irritated easily, for instance. It's not that people are irritating me, but I'm someone who gets into that. Can I just take ownership of that? That's horizontal integration. Difficult enough, challenging enough. The more you do that, something breaks into consciousness that's more than that, that I want to call a vertical dimension. You particularly can experience it on retreat, but you can experience it at any time in your life. You probably already have had a taste of it. It could be in aesthetics, it could be in the natural world, it's quite common. It could be just for no reason. It can sometimes happen around trauma. I remember when my father died, for a while I felt sort of blessed. I just felt in touch with something more than my ordinary consciousness. And it seemed to be much more stable for a while, and it quietly went. And it was even a bit of a surprise, because I felt like I, almost like a kind of grace. But actually, I was very sad that my father died. But I was there was also something really, around it, on the funeral and everything, something incredibly sort of beautiful and calm, and even reliable in a weird way. I felt better, calmer for it, much to my own surprise. So that's what we're... That's this first stage, is cultivating integration. Without integration, we'll just be constantly changing course. Without integration, you'll have this horrible feeling that your life isn't really going anywhere. It's sort of what I call crumbliness. You know when you do that, when you've done lots of emails, but you have this horrible sense that you're not really doing anything. So that at the end of the day, someone says, "What have you done?" You have this horrible sense, I haven't really done anything. Horrible feeling, I find. Or when you feel like you're wasting your time watching a rubbish film, or in a social situation that where you can't talk more genuinely, I have this horrible feeling that my life, this isn't enough. This can't be right. You know, at least I have that feeling. So I want to say something about how we might practice that, and then I want to sort of get you to think about that. So, in terms of horizontal integration, what I want to suggest is this mindful walk. I can't remember what page I've written it on. But if you look in this chapter, when it gets to practice, there's a suggestion of a mindful walk. This needs to be a walk you already do. I don't need to find it. It needs to be a walk you already do, not one that you do for spiritual reasons. Otherwise you won't do it, basically. It could be walking to the tube. It could be the first 10 minutes of your cycle ride. Try and do a mindful walk every day. It needs to be around 10 or 15 minutes long, if possible. You might need to think, okay, well, I don't walk that long. Okay, so what else could you do? So say your walk to the tube is 5 minutes. Well, how about that when you get onto the tube, you're going to do a breathing space, an extended breathing space with your eyes closed, standing with all those people and the smell of shampoo. There's an awful lot of apple shampoo, isn't there? Standing there and you just do it, thinking, okay, I'm going to do a breathing space. So you're going to use that time quite consciously. I've got two suggestions for it, one in the book and one that I'm bringing to you just now. One is that you just keep on noticing propuncture, as we've been saying, mental proliferation. Keep stepping out of that into your body. Genuinely creative thought, genuine imagination, as we'll come on to later in the course, is grounded in your body. It's not an alienated abstraction. It's grounded. Yeah? So keep on stepping out of propuncture into your body, feeling your body as you walk, the clothes that you're wearing, the air on your skin. If you might get a journal notebook, so a journey notebook. So what I would suggest in the book, you have a little notebook that you write down whether you've done it. find ways of reminding yourself to do it. Very easy to be mindful, very difficult to remember to do it. So try and find ways of reminding yourself to do it. Try and decide when your walk starts and when it finishes. Yeah. So it probably finishes when you put your Oyster card on the tube thing. Yeah. The other way you can do this mindful work that I've been doing more at the moment is what is this practice of holes in your life. So as I talk to people and I look at my own life, people seem more and more sort of busy. We had all these time-saving things that have made us more and more busy. It's incredible. So look for the holes in your life. So one of the holes of your life is walking to the tube. It might also be, if you're at work, you know, if you're in an office block, it might be the lift going down. It's going to the loo is a hole in your life. I walk up from here up to my community above here. It's all those times in your life where you're actually not someone. You're not, you know, in my case, I'm not a teacher at the London Buddhist Centre. I'm not anyone. I'm just walking upstairs, or I'm just going to the loo, or I'm just washing my hands or something. See if you can tune into those holes in your life and try and use all of those holes, either in the mindful walk or just even more generally. Just times where you're not anyone. You're not, you know, working in banking, whatever you're doing, you're not a film director, you're not anyone, you're just a person. So see if you can open out to the holes in your life and try to experience yourself in those holes more. The instinct in those holes is to just think, hang on, I need to think about stuff. So I'm next, and I'm going to go do that, and then I'm going to do that, and I'm this sort of person doing that sort of job or whatever it is. See if you can just drop into those holes. And tune into your body. But even try and have a sense that I don't need to be someone now. You know, as I walk upstairs from here, I don't need to be Maitreya Bandhu who's just led a class. I'm just walking upstairs. It's a hole into me. As I get into bed and read my book, I'm not a teacher at the Buddhist Centre. I've not been coming here for 25, 30 years. I'm just reading, you know, you can just really enjoy, try and take notice of those holes where you're not anyone. You're not a doctor, you're not a sailor, a tinkerer, whatever. Try and do that. You might find that too much of a practice, so you might just want to do it for that walk or find some way of doing that, and I want you to discuss that in a minute. Yeah? And then the other thing I want you to do, if you can, and this is a big if, and you might not be able to do this, is see if you can find an opportunity to tell your life story. That's easy enough, isn't it? You know, it's only 22 minutes past 9, you better get that done by the end of the evening. So if you've got a friend, just think, and you might not be able to do it in the next week, but you might just contact a friend of yours and say, no, this is a mad idea, but I'm doing this course at the London Buddhist Centre, and don't worry about it. You can do a joke about chanting and all that. You get all that, do all the jokes for them, and then they relax. And what I thought we might do is, why don't we just sort of meet up one evening and we just tell each other our life a bit. Now, that could take a long time, so you might want to do it in various ways. So one way of doing it is just choose a part of your life that feels particularly significant, a period of your life that's significant. Or sometimes what we do is we talk about turning points in our life, yeah? Sometimes just two or three turning points that feel important to us. And see if you can talk about that, yeah? And if you can do that with someone who understands you, who is, you know, who you can be honest with, perhaps you can't do that. You know, if you can't do that, you might want to just write about it. You might think, actually, I can't do that. Fine. You might want to just write something about your life. If you're writing, you can do all that in the privacy of your diary. Yeah? But see if you can. Don't worry if you can't, but see if you can. Okay, so that's really simple practices. So there's the mindful walk, either using it to step out of prapuncture, or see if you can do this practice of holes in your life, just stepping into those holes and not being anyone. see if you can tell your life story to someone, or, you know, a few points of your life, and read the chapter again. There's a lot more to say about this. See if you can keep on. We're trying to do a whole campaign with ourselves, thinking about stuff, feeling stuff, i.e. telling our story, living out stuff, i.e. doing the mindful walk. So that might be enough to do this week. You might, some of you had, you know, you might have simplified your life last week. Like if you'd done that one draw, how about you try and do the next draw this week? Could you still do something if you can? If you, still so important, isn't it, to find a way of simplifying? Is there something you can do there? But what you need to do, let's meet together in a moment in twos or threes. Try and come up with something reasonable and realistic and do, as I say, less rather than more, but less that you can actually do. So you might just say, tell you what, I'll just do this walking meditation every day. That's all I'm going to do. Some of you, I know, are already meditating. So you might say, okay, what I'm going to do, I'm just going to meditate this week. I'm not going to do that walking meditation stuff. I'm going to just do my meditation. But I'm really going to work on this stepping out of prepuncture, not taking prepuncture personally. I'm just going to keep on noticing it and coming out of it. I'm breathing more and doing my meditation. And I might simplify my life a bit more. I might try and get to bed a bit earlier. Something like that. Something you can really do. Yeah? So let's just turn to your...